My name is Jeff, and I'm a member of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, Local 3903, teaching assistants, contract faculty, research and graduate assistants at York University. And I've spent much of the last, most of the last decade or so as a rank and file member of various unions, mostly CUPE. And so my perspective is on how to build militants and build democracy within those union structures to build networks of rank and file workers that go beyond the sort of contractually limited concerns of the union executives. And also, I've been for many years a member of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, and so I've tried to build links to get union resources into the hands of OCAP. Because quite frankly, if the unions were half as tenacious and militant as OCAP, we'd be all in a hell of a lot better place than we're at, in our workplaces and in our communities. And so for me, the focus, because I don't take the approach that we need to get better, nicer people into structures that are still brutally rotten. So I'm not interested in reformist elections and running reform candidates and things like that. My work has been in building rank and file networks within our local and to build networks from the local into the communities and overcome that barrier that the barriers that exist within the workplaces, for one thing, that keep workers often isolated and not working in support of each other, because union structures work often in a very individualistic way around grievances and health and safety and things like that. It's something that you experience and suffer as an individual, and you go to the staff person of the union or you go to the health and safety officer, and they kind of work you through the paperwork and maybe you get something done. And there's not a sense that if I'm experiencing this as a workplace concern that we all share, and we should think of collective ways to deal with it and to confront the boss. But also the barriers between our workplaces and the resources that we've built up in our workplaces, which are, as far as I'm concerned, resources of the working class. And, you know, our workers live in communities, and why should those resources be stuck in the union? We've built those things up. Why should they be stuck dealing with contract issues and collective bargaining and things that the state legitimizes? Why shouldn't they be in our communities making our lives better? So I want to talk a little bit about the way that I've been involved in building those networks and building those rank and file connections. Flying squads were mentioned, and that's one sort of, there's been a resurgence of rank and file organizing over the last, well, it's kind of not a resurgence anymore, but if you go back to 2001, say, flying squads were emerging in a number of unions, CAW, CUPE, of course, and even UFCW, notoriously undemocratic and inactive union. And the flying squads were simply, they got a lot of attention for a while, and really they're nothing more than phone trees. A phone tree of militants, right? People who are active and not bureaucrats. That's the other thing. There's always been a struggle in the flying squads to limit participation from executives and keep them rank and file. That's one of the things that hurt the CAW flying squads, that exec members were part of the flying squads and able to control them. That's another story. Really just phone trees and email lists of people who are ready to come together, on a quick call's notice. OCAP has an action going down at an immigration office, put a call into the flying squad or one member of the flying squad, it initiates the phone tree and the email list and for each flying squad, and hopefully you get numbers of people to come out for the action. And when flying squads were first emerging, OCAP could count at, when we had actions at immigration or welfare offices, we could count on 50 or 60 rank and file unionists coming out to those actions to fill those offices with union banners and flags. And it really made a tremendous difference. You could see it in the faces of the security guards when, we would go in there as 16 OCAPers, how they would respond to us as like, OCAP again. And when we went in with 50 or 60 unions, and they were like, whoa, we don't know what to do. We're surrounded by people with like CAW hats and stuff like that, right? And it really made a difference. We had a situation at an immigration office out by the airport where they deport people. And this was around a deportation. And we took flying squads out there, and there were about 50 or 60 CAW, CUPE, UFCW. And we were getting nowhere in trying to talk with someone to set up a meeting to stop the deportation. And one of the CAW members stepped forward and said, look, We have members in all of the factories. This has been an industrial plaza. We have members in every factory around this office. And it's just going to take a phone call for us to bring twice as many, three times as many members over here. So deal with it now, because if you wait till tomorrow, that's what's going to happen. So,
can we clap now?
Oh, no. Now then, I won't talk about what happened to the CAW Flying Squad. But a big part of the Flying Squad is doing that kind of rapid response and militant action, right? Willingness to come out and not be constrained by collective bargaining, or not be constrained by even legalities, or the strict legalities of a situation, and bring union resources to bear, you know, in support of an organization rooted in the community that doesn't have a lot of resources, but has really good organizing strategies and practices. The other thing that that the Flying Squads have been able to do is to develop a creativity, because they're participatory and because they're bringing in members. We have very limited meetings. You know, you don't want to get caught up in meetings, and Flying Squads are great places for people who hate meetings. But we do have spaces where we can discuss, you know, democratically, openly, how to work around various issues. When you get in this situation, kind of, when you have that kind of creativity and participation, you know, you get amazing shifts in how you approach issues. And I'll just mention the strike that my local was part of. Went for several weeks, one of the longest post-secondary strikes in English Canada. And throughout the strike, we had open Flying Squad, open strike committee meetings that all the members could attend and develop strategies. And one of the things that came out of that was the shift away from bargaining that happens, you know, all the bargaining teams over in the hotel and they're working things out. I mean, that's the way the bosses like to deal with things. They set up those structures to deal in that way, to isolate a few members off in a hotel room and put pressure on them and hope that they'll crack, right? So we said, well, screw that. That's not where the strike is happening. So we did research and found out who the CEOs were that were on the board of governors at York. And we said, let's go to their offices. So the Flying Squads went to the offices of the CEOs of the boards of governors, and we gave them work boots with corporate logos on them as the Corporate Bootlicker Award, and went into the law offices on Bay Street, where Dale Lastman, the mayor's son and the CEO of the Second Cup, is hanging out, and went in there, and it just stunned them. And so we hear back from the bargaining team that, hey, you know what happened? This is incredible. Someone went to Dale Lastman's office and a couple of these other hacks, right? And they were stunned. They're like, well, yeah, they're not just on the picket lines, you know, shutting down classes that aren't happening anyway. They're like coming to our offices, and they didn't like that a whole hell of a lot. As well, when they forced a ratification vote on us, and we rejected it, and the next day they said they were going to bus in students, that this was their new shift in strategy, they were going to bus in students. So we put out a call to the Flying Squads, and we had a few hundred workers from different unions come out and just fill every gate. And some of them went over and surrounded the buses. And there was actually one student that showed up that tried to get to the bus, and that was a reporter from the student paper who went to cover the story. So participation, democracy within the locals too, it's something that helps us when we're dealing with leadership that want to keep things contained, want to go through all the proper channels and set up meetings with the boss and things like that. In our local, we had just by a fluke, a fairly conservative president got elected just in the last year when we were going through bargaining, wanted to shut down our open bargaining process. All of our bargaining happens at general membership meetings, not in bargaining rooms. And then started to compile files on militants within the local, people in the Flying Squads. Right? So we just put out a call to the Flying Squad list and showed up at the meetings. And within a couple weeks, we had a recall and the president was gone. And open bargaining was maintained as well. Flying Squads are one mechanism to one organization structure to break down the sort of lines. They go across locals. You don't have to be a member of our local to be involved in Flying Squad actions. You don't have to be a unionized worker at all, right? I mean, there are Flying Squads of high school students during the Ontario Common Front actions, or high school Flying Squads that played a big part for sure I can speak in Toronto. It's not about union affiliation. It's not about your workplace. It's not about, you know, your job. Students, community, activists can all take part in those networks, and through those networks can learn from each other by example, do skill sharing and learn different ways of acting and work together building campaigns. I think I'll just wrap up there actually, and we can talk about things in the discussion period. I think that the other thing I wanted to talk about was our rank and file committees. In addition to the flying squads, we also have established rank and file committees around. We have an anti-racism committee and an anti-poverty committee, and what we're able to do there is again to step outside the sort of limitations of business unionism that deals with the contract and meetings with the bosses and collective bargaining and stuff. And we've actually been able to deal with issues affecting people in the communities around York, because York is this like moon base that's set off from the rest of the neighborhoods around it, and neighborhoods that are really affected by a lot of things like really repressive policing, intense policing, harassment by security guards. People can't even get into their own apartments without having to give ID and have to sign in guests and things like that. Low-income neighborhoods, and we've been able to again bring resources through the Anti-Poverty Committee, union resources, into those communities to help with things when people are facing eviction, stop evictions, when people are getting hassled by landlords who aren't doing repairs, get in and fight those landlords with people from the union coming to confront the landlords and get the repairs done, and also to work on campaigns that are rooted in those communities as well. The other thing that we do is to open up the committees to members of the communities who aren't in the union, right? So we don't buy into this, you know, if you're going to be involved in the union, you have to, you know, so be a member and carry a card of the union. The union is a class resource. It's a resource of the working class. It should be open to members of the working class. And so the anti-poverty group, for a long time, most of the members of the anti-poverty group weren't actually members of 3903. They were members of the community around, in the communities around York. And we're coming in and making decisions that were in some ways directing union policy and decisions about what the anti-poverty group could do and funding for the anti-poverty group and so forth, like having a place in the union and breaking down that barrier where, you know, you don't necessarily feel comfortable coming to York, you don't feel comfortable being in the union office or whatever, but getting, you know, to be really comfortable and kind of, you know, take important roles in those situations. So that's been really effective, and it's we've also been able to defend our own members. Like York, as well as being a boss, is also a landlord. And so when we've had members facing eviction from the York apartments, we'll have the union, you know, write to the boss or whatever. But we mobilize the flying squads and the anti-poverty groups to deal with it directly, to go to the president's office and say, look, you know, this has to be resolved. You can't be evicting me, right? Something that the union wouldn't normally take on in any real way. It's like, you know, well, your living conditions, that's your living conditions, you know, too bad. We've worked to get you a good wage and, you know, you should pay your rent, right? Sort of reactive things that you can often get. So I just want to end by saying that, you know, this is work that's ongoing and really requires a lot of vigilance, because I've mentioned the CAW a few times. The CAW national leadership became really concerned a couple of years ago that the flying squads were starting to develop this kind of rank and file power, that they were making decisions that didn't involve Buzz Hargrove and other levels of leadership at all. And we're talking about some fairly serious militant things. In Windsor, they were building cross local flying squads that were talking around the time of the Common Front of shutting down the NAFTA superhighway, right? And this really frightened the leadership, because they admitted that. Hargrove said that in a meeting with OCAP allies around the time of the finance minister's eviction, when they eventually pulled funding from OCAP and clamped down on the flying squads. Said that, you know, do you know what they're talking about? They're talking about shutting down our factories in Windsor, right? Like that, like, you know, Buzz has shares in Daimler Chrysler or something. Right. So I mean, there is a real, whenever you start to build this sort of counter power, you know, real working class, rank and file self-activity, there's always going to be this kind of tension between the leadership, which is trying to contain those resources and is trying to maintain the legitimacy that it has within official structures. And so we have to be vigilant in building these things. But I think if we don't, then we end up with situations like the Ontario Common Front, and go back to the days of action. I mean, people who were here during the days of action know the tensions that that happened there in between the unions and people who were organizing in the community and stuff. And we're left with a situation where that tremendous power that organized workers have, and you know, theoretically, politically, you can talk about that, but it really is a pent-up power. And so you end up with a situation where, you know, you've got OCAP and OCAP allies and OCF Toronto marching to the trying to march to the convention center to confront the Tories and getting clubbed by the cops, while the Ontario Federation of Labour is ending their rally, which they said at the same time so that they wouldn't be taking part in the Common Front rally. They're packing up and leaving, while people are saying, "Help! We need your help over here because we're getting hit by the cops." Right. And so it, when we look at there's going to be OCAP's launching a campaign to deal with the upcoming election, whenever it's called. And I'll talk more about that later if people are interested. But if we don't make those kinds of connections, grassroots, rank and file connections, then, you know, whatever tenacity we have and whatever fighting spirit we have, we're still really limited because we don't have that tremendous strength of organized labor. And we end up having to just make appeals to leadership for funding or to pass resolutions that never get followed up on. So I think that for those of us who are in unions, it's a work that we really have to take on and be serious about. It's difficult for people who are unemployed, people who are in community-based groups that don't have an into the unions because they're set up often in such an exclusive way. Can do that work to get those resources moving in a way that is a fighting way that can actually challenge and bring the bosses to crisis.